It's at the letters. Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Welcome to At the Letters. It's March 31st in the beautiful city of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. My name is Arden Zwelling. I'm a staff writer at Sportsnet magazine. I also occasionally write for Sportsnet.ca, where I file my stories to the man sitting to the left of me, Sportsnet.ca's baseball editor and my co-pilot on the At the Letters Blue Jays podcast, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. It's good to be talking to some Blue Jays here, something we're going to do a lot of in the upcoming season. And, you know, it's funny, for all of the spring training ups and downs, I feel like we're getting a little bit closer to finally seeing what this team is going to look like.
We are. It is something we do a lot of, and it's just not normally recorded. And now this year, every week, it will be recorded on Tuesdays. Throughout the 2015 season, we are going to be here looking at the ups and downs, the thicks and thins, the sunny days, the rainy days of your Toronto Blue Jays. We're going to cover it all. We'll be here with you throughout the ride. Ben, what can people expect from the At the Letters podcast?
A lot of Blue Jays talk and a lot of baseball talk. There's no question about that. I think that really you're going to hear a lot of you and me talking. You're going to hear a lot of other voices too, though, and that would include Blue Jays players. It would include people around the team, coaches, other decision makers with the team, and other people in baseball who have insight into the game or maybe insight into the Blue Jays or other teams that play in MLB. I think that there are lots of ways that we can bring them in as well. But the core of this show, I think, is going to be a lot of Blue Jays discussion.
Absolutely. And there's never any shortage of things to talk about with this team. You look at today on Tuesday, March 31st, they said they were going to announce the roster. And then they said, well, okay, we'll announce some of the roster, but it's going to be the parts that you already know about. Still so much uncertainty. I would argue more uncertainty today than I felt there was yesterday.
And I think that uncertainty is almost never going to end. I mean, we love the idea of an opening day roster that you can walk in and really point to as this is your 2015 Toronto Blue Jays team. Unfortunately, it doesn't really work that way for more than a couple days at a time. And I think that with Michael Saunders coming back, you know that this team is going to have to make changes relatively early on in the season. And even with waiver claims potentially looming within the next few days, the Blue Jays could adjust their bullpen, adjust their bench, even between now and opening day.
That's the thing. It's a fluid thing. A baseball roster is a thing that is in flux, and the Toronto Blue Jays, I would imagine, are going to be in flux for quite a bit of this year. It's very rare that you go through an entire season with five starting pitchers who all make 34 starts and, you know, nine guys around the diamond who are all going to, you know, play 162 games.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, the Blue Jays are going to need tons of depth that goes way beyond what they have on their 25-man roster. And I think every single team this time of year ends up stretching far beyond what they initially expect and hope. And that's part of the fun, is watching who ends up getting called on and how they perform.
And part of the fun will be deconstructing and criticizing and boosting up and looking at this Toronto Blue Jays roster that will be going north to Montreal and then to the Bronx next week to open the 2015 season. That is what we will be doing here today on At the Letters. We'll be looking at the roster in the first segment, and then in our second segment, we're going to play a little game of over under, where we will try to decide what's going to happen to some of the cast of characters that will be with you on your Toronto Blue Jays in 2015. We will be with you right here throughout 2015 on the At the Letters podcast. You can get us on sportsnet.ca. You can also get us on iTunes. Please like, favorite, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. When we come back, we will break down this opening day roster and take a look at what you might be able to expect. It's At the Letters. At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast on sportsnet.ca, on iTunes. I'm Arden Zwelling. I'm here with Ben Nicholson-Smith. Let's get down to it. We have an approximation of what we feel like this roster is going to look like. We at least think we know the likely position players, or at least the starters. If you look around it, you can see Russell Martin's your catcher. First base, you're going to have Justin Spoke, Edwin Encarnacion, some sort of variation of that. Devin Travis at second base. Jose Reyes at short. Josh Donaldson third. Kevin Pillar starting left field until Michael Saunders is ready to come back from the disabled list. Dalton Pompey in center. Jose Bautista in right field. And whoever was not playing first base out of Edwin Encarnacion and Justin Smoke, likely your designated hitter, unless you wanted to get D'Aaron Navarro in there, put Smoke on the bench or get Encarnacion off his feet. Whatever you want to do, there's a lot of ways you can kind of juggle this thing. But what you were going to have to do with this Blue Jays batting order is you're going to have Kevin Pillar, Dalton Pompey, and Devin Travis at the bottom of the lineup. Three unproven bats, guys that maybe you aren't entirely sure what you're going to get out of at the major league level. Ben, I would posit it to you. Can you get away with hiding those three guys at the bottom of the order?
Well, I think you're still going to have a competent offense no matter what. They have so much talent in the first five, six hitters in their batting order that they're going to score a lot of runs. And I think at least be a comfortably above average offense. But if you want to be an elite offense, it's really tough to do if you have two or three guys who are hitting well below average. You look last year at teams like the Angels, they were good 1 through 9. And teams like the Blue Jays even, they had one weak spot, basically second base. Other than that, they got pretty good production from everywhere else in the diamond. I think that's basically what you need if you want to have one of those elite offenses.
The difference between the Blue Jays and the Angels, whereas the Angels only had one Mike Trout, one guy who was going to have an OPS of, you know, in the 800s. His was probably in the 900s, really, when you look at it. The Toronto Blue Jays have Edwin Encarnacion, Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, three guys who you can reasonably expect to OPS well over 800, to hit a lot of bombs, to get on base. I mean, that's three elite bats. Can that make up for any deficiencies at the bottom of the order?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the huge calling card on the Toronto Blue Jays this year, is they have these bats. I mean, these guys are as good as it gets when it comes to middle of the order hitters. That's what's going to carry this team to potentially a run at contention. Obviously, the Blue Jays are hoping to actually make the playoffs, but it's really going to depend, I think, on that supplementary cast of characters. And if they can actually get some production from second base, that will go a really long way. Same goes for center field, where you don't really know what you're going to be getting. And I think that when you have those positions that are up in the air, and for the time being, Kevin Pillar in left field would be another one of them, I think you just kind of have to hold your own. And if you can even have an OPS that's 650, 700 from those guys, you're probably going to end up being more than happy with that.
Well, you kind of look at what the Royals did last year, where they were just, across the board, they were just okay. You know what I mean? They didn't have a truly elite guy. Like, Alex Gordon was pretty good, but they didn't have, like, a next-level guy. Just across the board, they were all just passable. Like the Baltimore Orioles last year, they hid J.J. Hardy in their lineup. They hid Jonathan Schoop a lot of the time. Chris Davis was a guy who well underperformed last year. He's a big-name guy, but if you actually look at his numbers, I mean, that's a guy that you could argue they were almost hiding because he wasn't really performing. They had Ryan Flaherty. Caleb Joseph took a lot of at-bats for them when Matt Wieters went down. I mean, that's a team that won the division. They had elite pitching. The Jays, however, this year likely need to score runs. They need to have this offense produced just because of how unproven their pitching staff is.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that the Blue Jays are necessarily going to compare with the 2014 Royals in terms of defense. Definitely not in terms of the bullpen. Yeah. Even in a best case scenario, they're not comparing to that bullpen. So they're going to need their bats, and they're going to get them. I'm pretty confident. I mean, you look around the league, how many more hitters really give you that much more certainty than what Bautista and Encarnacion and Donaldson can offer? And throw in Reyes and Martin, those guys can do things offensively to help your team as well. Michael Saunders, this team is going to hit. I think that's really the backbone of it. I think they can get away with some weak spots in the bottom of the order, but I'm not expecting Devin Travis and Dalton Pompey to be elite offensive players from the get-go.
You mentioned Michael Saunders, who is targeting opening day, April 13th, I believe, as his return date. So that would be about two series into the season is when he'd be coming back. That would presumably force Kevin Pillar onto the bench into a fourth outfield role. Nothing against Kevin Pillar. Michael Saunders is an elite player in left, or not. I mean, he's better than Kevin Pillar in left field. I shouldn't say he's elite, but he is a better option than Kevin Pillar in left field. Meiser Asturias, also probably coming back not too far into the season. I mean, it's the kind of injury that would have been a DL stint if it happened during the season. He was shut down for 10 days completely. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he was back sometime in April. That's a guy who's on your roster. That's a guy who's got guaranteed money. That's a major league veteran. That's a guy you're going to be using. What does that mean for guys like Ryan Goins or Steve Tolleson, Danny Valencia, Justin Smoke, some of these kind of bubble guys on this roster when those two come back?
Well, I think it depends on the guy. I mean, I think Valencia is on this team for a good stretch. I don't think he's at risk of losing his job. I think Smoke, too, is looking pretty good. The guys, the position players that I would look to would be Goins and Tolleson as maybe players on the fringe of how the Blue Jays are going to configure their roster. And the first decision that they make could affect a guy like Steve Tolleson, where when Saunders is back, maybe you don't need Tolleson in there as that extra outfielder. Ryan Goins is a guy who could be optioned to start the year, depending on what they do in the bullpen. So I think that would kind of be the first domino to fall. And then with Meisser, I don't know. I mean, I feel like this one might take some time to play out. And I think that Travis is going to get a pretty long look because, you know, I don't think it's entirely fair to Travis to bring him up as this opening day second baseman, never played above double A, unless you're going to give him a real shot.
No, it kind of does indicate that maybe Meisser will be out for most of April. If you're bringing up Travis to play, because the thing with Devin Travis this year, wherever he is, you want him playing every day. His development is very important. You want him taking consistent at-bats. You don't want him up here sitting on the bench. So I think that for as long as he's in Toronto, he is going to be the starter. When Meisser Asturias comes back, I mean, does Asturias take over that second base job? Is he going to share time with Devin Travis? I don't think that's a situation that you want. So maybe when Asturias comes back, that's at the, you know, the sacrifice of Goins and Tolleson. Tolleson, a guy who's out of options, by the way, a guy that you would have to pass through waivers. Goins you can send down, but Tolleson's a guy you might lose. When Asturias comes back, if Travis is still your starting second baseman, I mean, Goins and Tolleson might not be on this roster anymore.
It's possible. I mean, depending on how long the Blue Jays want to roll with an 8-man bullpen, sounds like that's something they want to do, which would shorten the bench. Obviously, big reasons to only rely on 7 relievers, as we'll get into a little bit later. But, you know, I think that it does put the crunch on the Blue Jays bench a little bit. And I think the Meisser thing is going to take a while to play out because I think that Travis is the guy right now and he's going to get a fair shot here.
Quickly, what is the next layer of offense on this team? We talk about the manipulations of this roster and what's going to happen. I mean, we can look at guys who are coming back for injury. What about guys that potentially go down to injury? To me, you look at this team, like the margin of error is razor thin in terms of the next level of guys that you would bring in to replace offense. If you lost an Encarnacion or a Bautista to a DL stint, a Donaldson to a DL stint, he hasn't had one in the last 2 years, by the way, but if that did happen playing on turf, a Reyes, I mean, what's the next layer of offense that comes in?
I'm not seeing one. Maybe I'm just missing it, but I'm not really seeing a clear next level of offense. And that's okay if everyone's healthy. As I said, I think they're going to score a lot of runs if they're healthy. But if they're not, then maybe you start looking at guys like Andy Wilkins, who they just claimed on waivers. You know, at that point, you're calling on Ryan Goins. Maybe Kevin Pillar is staying in an everyday role at that point. Kawasaki can get on base a little bit, but I don't know. Am I missing something? Am I seeing an extra layer of offense here that doesn't exist?
I think that if you're in a place where Munenori Kawasaki and like Caleb Gindel are playing legit, like significant at bats on this team, like something has gone horribly wrong. Like something's gone really, really badly. And that is what probably scares you the most of this team. Beyond the other things that should rightfully scare you in terms of throwing 20-year-olds into the fire and going with unproven players around the diamond and through the pitching staff and the bullpen. The fact that if somebody goes down and if somebody gets hurt playing on a surface that is known to hurt people, there isn't another level that is just ready to step in and replace that, put up anywhere near the level of production.
Yeah, it's true. And I think you look around the league, the good thing for the Blue Jays is not many teams have a ready replacement for their best players. The Red Sox on the position player side, I think, would be one, but I think they're the exception. I think most teams around baseball this time of year have big time question marks beyond their starting 8 or 9. At least in the Blue Jays case, they do have a strong starting 9, but that doesn't erase any of the questions they have on the pitching side.
There are questions on the pitching side. What a perfect segue, Ben Nicholson-Smith. I love how you tee me up like that. Starting pitching. I will posit to you that the success and failure of this pitching staff could hinge on the success and failure of one Drew Hutchison. You know what you're going to get out of Mark Burley and R.A. Dickey. You get 400 innings, probably somewhere around 4 earned runs per 9 from those two over 400 innings. Put it in the books. That's going to happen. Aaron Sanchez and Daniel Norris, the other side of the spectrum, from the what you absolutely know you're going to get to what you have no idea what you're going to get. Two guys with one major league start between them. Two guys that, yes, tons of upside, great stuff, some of the most talented pitchers in the organization untested at the major league level. I'm not suggesting that they're going to fail. I'm suggesting that we can't put as much certainty into their performance as we can from the other two. I think they will be very good. However, if there are slumps and if there are hiccups from those two, I don't think anybody would be that surprised. That leaves Drew Hutchison, which is the guy who last year had a very good season. This year ends up on a lot of lists of guys who say, hey, maybe a breakup candidate, maybe a sneaky like Cy Young candidate, maybe a sneaky kind of, he's got that slider that's vastly improved. He's pitching much better. He's got good chemistry with Russell Martin so far this spring. Do you agree that, I mean, the success and failure of Drew Hutchison will be very, very important to this starting pitching?
Absolutely. I think Hutchison is a guy who can take a step forward this year based on what he did last year, which was very good. And I think that anytime you look at pitchers who are A, 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery, B, he's a guy who did make some strides as far as developing that slider last year. So I think that him combined with the fact that he's still very young, getting more used to the league, 24 years old, I think Hutchison's a guy who could have a really good year. And you're right. He's going to be asked to fill a big role for this club. And if he makes 30 starts and they go as well as the Blue Jays are hoping that they can, then that would give you, you know, he's their opening day starter, but he's not an ace or close to it. But maybe this year he takes that step from being a 4 or 5 starter to being a number 3 starter, even a number 2. And if he can do that, that would be huge for Toronto.
You can look at his season last year, and he had 184 and 2/3 innings pitched, a 4.48 ERA. A 3.85 fielding independent ERA, however, which is much better, which would kind of indicate that perhaps he got hurt a little bit by luck. Perhaps the defense behind him wasn't helping him a lot. Ballpark factors, things like that. You can kind of look at his numbers and his peripherals, a strikeout per inning last year, and say there is absolutely room for improvement and room for this guy to take a step. However, last year, we also saw Drew Hutchison struggle with his velocity at times, need an extra day here or there, not be able to take the mound when called upon at all times. And that's something that I think that the Blue Jays will need from him this year, because when you look at who is behind this starting five, who is the number 6, who is the number 7, we're getting into kind of Marco Estrada territory, Liam Hendricks territory. It's not a favorable situation.
It's really not. I mean, they have very limited depth beyond their starting five. Marco Estrada, maybe at this point, he's been starting some spring games, but once you're into the season, he's pitching in a late inning role. You don't want to go directly from pitching one inning to pitching five. Liam Hendricks, Todd Redden, these guys have started before, but really that's not someone that you want to be going to as a go-to. So, you know, again, it comes back to Hutchison, and he's a guy who can take steps forward, but he does legitimately have things to work on. I mean, he's not a perfect pitcher by any stretch. He struggled last year with men on base. He struggled last year against left-handed hitting, I should say. And that's something he's going to have to work on. Maybe that's a changeup for him that really allows him to get those opposite-handed hitters out. But they hit him to an 800 OPS last year.
It comes back to how scary the depth is on this team. Just like we talked about with the bats, it's the same thing with the arms, because if you can't be sure, you know, what you're going to get out of an Aaron Sanchez and a Daniel Norris, out of how many innings you're going to be able to rely on them for, and if you can't be sure of Drew Hutchison, I mean, that is scary when you look at the guys behind them. So, I mean, what realistically, Aaron Sanchez, Daniel Norris, I mean, realistically, what can we expect out of them?
Okay, Sanchez, I think, is going to get a ton of ground balls. I think that this is going to be his calling card as a big league pitcher for now, whereas last year it was maybe that dominant 97-mile-an-hour fastball. I think we're still going to see that, but I think maybe more so than the velocity, we're going to really be taken by the sink that he has on that pitch. Everything he throws is hard. I mean, Sanchez just mixes in a hard changeup. Even when he's throwing his slider that he's working on, that's a hard pitch as well. You'll see the curveball, which, again, is not a slow looping curve. It's a relatively hard curve that might come in at 82. So, you know, Sanchez is someone who I think has the capacity to pitch relatively deep into games, considering he's 22, considering he's a rookie. But if he gives them 170 innings, you know, of solid league average ERA baseball, getting lots of ground balls, keeping the walks in check, which is going to be a challenge for him as it would be for any rookie, I think they'd be pretty happy with that for Aaron Sanchez.
when you look at it, so if that's the expectation of Aaron Sanchez, you look at it, Daniel Norris is kind of the biggest upside guy. If you look at one guy who's going to like take the ball this year and perhaps put up kind of numbers similar to what Marcus Stroman did last year, like an ERA in the low threes. I think from Daniel Norris, you could expect a strikeout an inning. He's a high strikeout guy. If you're going to look at a guy who's going to perhaps turn into the quote unquote ace or the quote unquote best pitcher on this staff, Daniel Norris is kind of that dude.
Yeah, he is. And it's a lot to ask of a pitcher who started last year this time in A ball, and he's only 21 years old, but the stuff is there. There's no question that Daniel Norris has the potential to be an impact big league starter. And that's really exciting for Blue Jays fans who, for a long time, have seen starters come up and flop at the big league level, whether that's Kyle Drabek, who was claimed, or any number of a long list of pitching prospects. And then Stroman kind of ended that trend last year. And I almost wonder if he and his successes pushed the expectations almost too far to the other end of the spectrum, where he came up and he made it look easy when he was starting. He made it look insanely easy to go up against these pretty impressive offenses in the American League East. I wouldn't expect either Sanchez or Norris to match that kind of success, but I think both of them have the potential to be very solid rookie pitchers, very solid pitchers for the Blue Jays this year.
I agree with you. And I think that it is very, very important the Blue Jays get solid starting pitching this year, because when you look at their bullpen, it doesn't inspire a tremendous amount of confidence. When you look at, so your two locks, the only two guys that you know are going to be there, as Alex Anthopoulos said today on the radio, Brett Cecil and Aaron Loop. We would assume Miguel Castro will also be there, had an absolutely dominant spring, looks ready, throws strikes, big heater, nice off speed. I mean, there's nothing not to like about this guy other than his age. And the Blue Jays seem to be moving away from kind of burying young 20s guys in the minors and bringing them up slowly. They say, hey, if you got your stuff now, we'll throw you right in there. Marco Estrada likely to be in there. Todd Redman likely to be in there. Colt Hines, perhaps a third lefty. Jeff Francis was sent out. So, I mean, Colt Hines is kind of by default, the third lefty, and he's had a very nice spring. And then Roberto Osuna. What say you, Ben?
Well, I think Estrada's got to be a lock too, right?
I guess so.
Because Norris is starting.
I would have thought that, but Alex Anthopoulos today on the radio said he wasn't a lock.
Well,
he didn't say specifically he wasn't a lock, but he said the only two locks are Cecil and Loop.
I'm putting Estrada in as a lock for now. But yeah, I think what you laid out there makes a lot of sense. And I think Castro too has got to be a lock.
I would think so. The way that he performed this spring, I would think so. I just go off of what the GM said, but
totally fair. That's much more reasonable than I'm being right now.
Alex Benthopoulos says Miguel yeah. Castro lock. I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, so I think Castro and Estrada are going to be in there. I think Redman has a very good shot, and I agree with you that Colt Hines is looking really good. I mean, he went 10 appearances this spring, and he was scoreless, and the Blue Jays have sent Jeff Francis out. So I think Colt Hines is basically looking very, very good for this team as yeah. well. So for me, the real wild cards remaining in this bullpen are Roberto Osuna. Yep. Does he make the team as a 20-year-old, or do they send him to Class A? And what a kind of choice they're making, right? I mean, how often do you see that in baseball, where you're either going to be in a big league bullpen or pitching an A ball?
Yeah.
And then you're also dealing with Liam Hendricks and what to do with this guy who's out of options, but who can give you a bit of length. To me, I don't think an 8-man bullpen is going to be justified unless you have 8 all-star caliber relievers. And I don't see that on this Jays team.
No, absolutely not. And we've identified 6 guys who we would think are locks. Depending on what you do, if you option Ryan Goins, fine, that gives you 2 more spots. Still, you got Roberto Osuna, Liam Hendricks, and Alex Anthopoulos making all kinds of noise, talking about, yeah, you know, there's a lot of trade chatter right now. There's a lot of guys who are going to be hitting waivers. We might be looking to do that. We don't want to settle our bullpen just yet, in case we bring guys in. You don't have enough spots. Like, something has to give here. I would think that this kind of signals perhaps the end to this pipe dream that Roberto Osuna was going to be on the big league roster.
I wonder. You know, I think that's one of those real questions that lingers on this roster. And for the most part, I think we know how it's going to look. But Osuna, to me, is that one question of what do they do with him? What's the right thing to do with him? I don't know. I feel like with Castro, at least, you have a much more certainty they're going to break him in the bullpen. Anthopoulos sounds increasingly comfortable with the idea that you can break these young pitchers in as relievers, and then maybe later transition them to the bullpen if you feel like, or excuse me, to the rotation if you feel like that's where their future is.
And Asuna seems to have a lot more upside as a starter than Castro would. And Asuna is coming off of Tommy John surgery. And it seems like, from what we've heard, the off-speed stuff just isn't quite there yet, which is what you would expect from a guy coming off of Tommy John surgery. I always thought it was kind of weird that he was being thrust into this bullpen role. But I mean, I haven't been in Dunedin for a month, right? So that's what guys down there were saying. Fine, that's what's happening. It seemed weird and it smelled fishy. And I think that today you're kind of seeing it come out that, like, wait a second, like, this guy, nope, this wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I honestly don't have much of a read on Asuna. I won't be surprised if he's on the team. I won't be surprised if they say we're going to start with him in A-ball. And I think that comes down to what I would imagine is a lot of organizational discussion that they're having about Asuna and where he fits on this team short term and long term.
I wish we could talk about this bullpen more, but we're going to wrap up this segment here on At the Letters. And really, I mean, this bullpen's going to look different tomorrow. It might look different 2 days from now. I feel like every day I have a different read on how this bullpen looks.
Yeah, it's a shapeshifter, that's for sure.
It is going to be a point of consternation throughout this 2015 season. Speaking of points of consternation, after the break, Ben and I are going to play over-under. We are going to take stances on where things are going to end up in this 2015 Toronto Blue Jays season. It's going to be good. If I were you, I would not miss it. It's At the Letters on Sportsnet.ca and iTunes. We'll be back. At the Letters, Toronto Blue Jays podcast here on Sportsnet.ca and iTunes. I am Arden Zwelling. I am here with Ben Nicholson-Smith. We are going to play a little game of over-under, looking forward to your Toronto Blue Jays 2015 season. I will begin. Ben, the first question. Russell Martin passed balls in his first game catching R.A. Dickey at Yankee Stadium, set at 1.5.
I'll take the under on this because Martin has worked well with Dickey during the spring. And I know spring training isn't quite the same as the regular season, but I believe that, you know, the same reasons that led the Blue Jays to Martin in the offseason, his athleticism, his ability to receive the ball, I think that's really going to pay off when he's catching Dickey. And I think that'll start in his first outing of the season on the second game.
I am taking the over. I'm not suggesting it's going to be like 6 or 7 pass balls, but I could see 2 or 3. It's different in the regular season. It is different. When you're at Yankee Stadium, adrenaline's going, the fatigue is starting to wear on you. You're going 6, 7 innings instead of kind of a controlled environment in spring training where the pressure isn't on, or maybe you're not playing a full game. I think it'll be over. I do think Russell Martin can catch R.A. Dickey, but I do think there will be more than 1.5 pass balls in that first outing.
Fair enough. Next one, Jose Reyes. Games played, and this is for a player who, in his first season with Toronto, 2013, played 93 games. Last year, though, all the way up to 143, and we have the over-under set at 130.5.
I'm taking the over. I like how Jose Reyes has looked this spring. I think that he's over the shoulder thing. I think he's over the hammy thing. I think that John Gibbons will manage his time on the turf a lot better this year than he did last year. A lot more DH days, a few days off sprinkled in there. I think that Jose Reyes will be above 130.5 games this year.
I'm with you. I think he will. You know, I think they're going to find ways to get him some off days, get him a little bit of a break from the turf. It can be tough on players, but I think they're going to be more cautious with him this year, and that should pay dividends for them.
Plus, look at the guy's Instagram, working out hard.
He works out very hard.
Works out real hard, that Jose Reyes. Moving right along, Dalton Pompey wins above replacement. We have set the over-under at 2 wins above replacement. Might I remind you that this is a guy that last year, across 3 levels of the minor leagues, hit 317, 392, 469 for an 861 OPS. Pretty dang good. Dalton Pompey, 2.0 war. Ben.
I'll take the under. Not by much, and not because I don't believe in Pompey as a prospect. I think he's going to be really good, and I think he's going to be pretty good right away. Defensively, on the bases, I think he's going to produce, but you look at center fielders in Major League Baseball. Last year, only 15 had 2 war. So that's half of the league. Do we think Pompey is going to be an above-average center fielder in his first season as a starter at the big league level? That's a big ask. I think he'll get there eventually, but I think he'll fall short. And not by a ton, but I do think he'll fall short this year.
I am going to take the over on the Dalton Pompey 2.0 WAR, mainly because I think he adds a lot of value defensively. I think he'll steal 15 to 20 bases, which will help that number as well. I think that he's going to be decent at the plate. I don't think he's going to be world-beating, but I think he has good plate vision, good plate discipline. I think he's going to be all right. You saw the homer against King Felix. You saw the homer against Verlander in spring training. I think he's going to be very good. I don't think he's going to be worlds above 2.0 WAR, but I think I could see a 2.1, 2.2 this year from Dalton Pompey.
Fair enough. Next up, we have Drew Hutchison. ERA 3.74, which was the exact major league ERA in 2014. So league-wide, that was the ERA. And Hutchison was above that in 2014. A lot of people think that he has the potential to dip below that this year. Are you one of them?
I am one of them. I think that he will be under the 3.74 ERA threshold this year. I think he's going to take steps. I think I really liked what I saw from him in the spring. You know, last year he came into spring having to kind of earn a spot in the rotation. This year didn't have to do that. Worked just as hard, looked just as good. Slider is vastly improved. I think he's, you know, working very well with Russell Martin. You know, I like this season for Drew Hutchison.
I do too. I think he's going to be under it. I think that he is an above average starter. And I think that starts this year.
Josh Donaldson, Toronto's third baseman, as he refers to himself on Twitter. We are going to look at his OPS. We have the over-under set at 825. For some context, last year, Josh Donaldson, 798 OPS in a pretty darn good year that he had for Oakland, playing in a tougher ballpark, though. Josh Donaldson, OPS of 825, then.
Over. You know, you look at Oakland and Toronto. I don't know that there are that many ballparks in baseball that are tougher to hit in than Oakland's Coliseum. And Rogers Center is very hitter-friendly, especially for right-handed power bats like Donaldson. So I'm taking the over on this. I think the park is going to help him, not to mention he's a very talented player.
I also like the over. I think Josh Donaldson's going to have a big, big year. Stepping into his prime, age 29 season, you know, he's 2 years removed from kind of the swing changes that have elevated him to an elite player. And like you said, playing at Rogers Center, I mean, I think he's just going to rake. I think he's going to crush. And I think that there's going to be a lot of runners on base for him as well. I think he's going to put up some very, very nice numbers this year. He's going to be hitting in some pretty good situations. I like Josh Donaldson to exceed that 825 OPS.
Justin Smoke, another newcomer on these Blue Jays, and he came from a pretty tough ballpark in his own right, but he had some success in Safeco Field, 2011, 15 homers, 2012, 19, up to 20. And then last year down to 7. This year, we have the over-under for Smoke's home runs at 15.5. What are you taking?
Give me that over on the Justin Smoke homers. You could put this at 20, I would go over. I think that Justin Smoke's going to play a lot in this Blue Jays lineup, just the way that things are lining up and the way that, you know, this roster has been constructed. I mean, if we talked about this at the beginning of spring, you could have done like Justin Smoke games played at like 0.5. I might have taken the under. But now I think Justin Smoke's going to play a lot for this team. He's got that power, and he's playing in a great park for that power. I'll take the over on the 15.5 homers.
The power is there. He's in a good park, but I'm not quite as bullish on the amount of playing time that he's going to get. I think that against right-handed pitching, he's going to see a ton of time. Against left-handed pitching, I think that you're going to see Deonna Navarro play. I think you're going to see Danny Valencia play. And I don't think we're going to see a lot of Justin Smoke's right-handed swing this year, so I'm taking the under.
Mark Burley, the most reliable guy in pretty much all baseball, 14 consecutive innings, or sorry, consecutive seasons, he has thrown more than 200 innings. We will put the Mark Burley innings pitched over-under at 200. Ben, what say you?
He's never missed a start, never been on the DL. I can't go against Mark Burley logging 200 innings until I see him somehow fall short of that threshold. So I'm taking the over. I think he'll get there, not by a ton, but I think he'll get there.
Hold on to your hats. This is the year Mark Burley pitches less than 200 innings. That's what I'm saying. I think he'll get close, but I do not think that he will pitch 200 this year. It's been a great, great run of consistency. When you look at what he's done for 14 straight seasons, is absolutely remarkable. It is impeccable what he has done. I think this is the year that he does not reach 200 innings, and I think this is possibly the last year of his career.
Wow. Free agent after this season, you're throwing it out there that you could see him calling it.
I could see him retiring for sure.
Wow.
Yes.
I wouldn't expect that, but that's interesting.
Over under Mark Burley retirements this year.
Yeah, I would take the under on that. But the next one we have here is Miguel Castro, big time reliever, big right arm, and it looks as though he's going to be pitching out of the Blue Jays bullpen, and even in some very high leverage situations right off the bat. So saves, Miguel Castro, 2015. We have the over under at 5.5.
I am going to take the over on that. Brett Cecil has struggled a bit with some arm soreness. Hasn't had a full spring training. I think that Miguel Castro, once he gets his feet wet in the majors and once he's kind of got his legs under him, that John Gibbons will look at a ninth inning situation where he's got one run or two run lead and three righties coming up. Brett Cecil's pitch recently, he'll say, you know what, I'm going to go to Miguel Castro here to get me out of this. So I think Miguel Castro over 5.5 saves.
I'll take the under, and I think that Castro is going to get a lot of opportunity to pitch in big spots. But first of all, I mean, there's no guarantee that he's going to stick with the Blue Jays, even though he's going to break camp with the team, get his chances. But he's 20, and there's no guarantee that he's going to stick with the team all year. That would be one reason. And the second reason is he's not the closer. I think Cecil's going to get most of those opportunities. And even though I expect Castro to be effective and to really break out as a useful piece for the Blue Jays, I'll take the under on this one.
Marco Estrada on the team, probably in the bullpen to start the year, but will he be needed to spot start for the Toronto Blue Jays? We are going to set the over-under of Marco Estrada starts at 9.5. Ben, what say you?
I'm taking the over, and this says more about the nature of pitching an entire season at the big league level than it does about the Blue Jays or about Marco Estrada. But teams just need so many starters. And I think Estrada is pretty close to the top of the line for the guys that the Blue Jays would consider. At this point, it's not that long since he was pitching multiple inning stints in spring training. So I think they're going to need him, and I'll take the over on Estrada.
I'm going to take the under. I do not think that you want Marco Estrada pumping 88, 89 mile an hour fastballs up in the zone at the Rogers Center for 4, 5, 6 innings at a time. I don't think that's something the Blue Jays want. I think this year the Blue Jays might even try to turn Marco Estrada into a bit of a higher leverage reliever, if you can believe it. I think they might try to make him a max effort guy. See if you can get that fastball up to 90, maybe 91. See if you can be used in limited doses. And be used situationally, because you've already got Todd Redmond as a long man in the bullpen and possibly Liam Hendricks as well. I don't think Marco Estrada will make more than 9.5 starts.
Work for Jay Happ. I mean, he's a fly ball guy as well, but he had some success in this stadium.
Fair enough.
Okay, next one we have here. Devin Travis is going to be the Blue Jays opening day second baseman, and he's going to get some chances in that role this year. We've set the OPS over under for him at 671, and we have a couple reasons for that. First of all, that was the MLB league average for second baseman last year, 671. And secondly, that happens to be Travis's exact zips projection for the upcoming season.
Funny how that works out, eh? Devin Travis, OPS of 671, I will take the over. I don't think it will be significantly over, but I will take the over. He puts the bat on the ball enough that I think that he can, leg out some singles here. He's got some wheels. I don't think he's going to walk a whole ton, which is what kind of makes me a little bit iffy about this production. But I do think that he's going to hit all right. And I think that above 671 is a reasonable expectation for Devin Travis.
I'm with you. I think above, but not above by a whole lot.
Kevin Pillars, another OPS one. But this time we're raising the expectations a little bit. Kevin Pillar, we've put the OPS at 700. This is a guy who last year in AAA OPS'd 868, and last year in the majors OPS'd 692. Kevin Pillar, 700 OPS, Ben.
Under, because he is going to face a lot of right-handed pitching, at least toward the start of the season when he's playing every day. And certainly if he keeps getting those regular at-bats, you look at what he did against righties last year, and it wasn't good. He was pretty overmatched, at least last year, struck out 10 times as often as he walked, posted a 630 OPS against right-handed pitching. And I think if you want to really take your game to the next level, I think Pillar's a good player, don't get me wrong, but I haven't seen him hit that right-handed pitching yet. So until then, I'm taking the under.
I'm taking the over on Kevin Pillar's OPS at 700. I think big things for Kevin Pillar this year. For a few reasons. He's looked better against righties in spring training. The bat speed's looked better. He's getting to that inside pitch. He's had some success against it this spring. And I think this might be the year that he kind of, you know, removes this quad A label and becomes a legitimate major league player. Now, maybe not an everyday player, a legitimate bench bat. And I also, I spoke to Marcus Stroman earlier this spring, and I was like, who can you watch out for this year? And he's like, look out for Osuna, look out for Castro. Those came true. He said, look out for Travis. And I was like, yep, that came true. He also said, look out for Kevin Pillar. In great shape, looks good. So I'm going to take that. I'm going to take the over.
A pretty good scouting report there from Stroman. Maybe they can get him doing some advanced games when he's recovering from his ACL injury.
Doesn't have much better to do right now.
Next one we have here is a tough one. I think we can both agree on that. And so this one revolves around the idea that basically anytime a team struggles, their manager's going to face heat, their bench coach, their GM, everyone's going to be on the hot seat, so to speak. And that applies to all 30 teams. The Blue Jays play 52 games in April and May of this year. Over-under for games managed by John Gibbons this season, we're setting it at 52.5.
I'm taking the over. I think a lot of fans might take the under, especially if the Blue Jays like start, you know, 3-7 or something like that in their first 10. People are going to be calling for his head, you know, a week. You know, he's going to be getting booed at opening day, right? But I think that John Gibbons will be with this team through till the end of the season, to be honest with you. So I'm taking the over.
I agree. I think that the Blue Jays are a good team on paper. They're looking pretty good, and I think the good teams stay in contention, and that will allow the Blue Jays to keep things going with the status quo.
Finally, the juiciest of all juicy over-unders, and Ben, I am so happy that you have to go first on this one. The Toronto Blue Jays have 4 regular season games in October. The season ends on October the 4th. We are going to set Blue Jays games played, any kind of game, regular season, wild card, playoff. Blue Jays games played in October at 4.5.
I'm taking the over. I think that they have enough in them not to win the division. I don't think they're the best team in the East. I think the Red Sox are going to win it. But I think that the Blue Jays are going to be right in there for that wild card. And ultimately, I'm predicting them to take one of those wild card spots.
As a person who has grown up for 27 years in the great city of Toronto, Ontario, and seen this team and what's happened to it, I have to take the under. And I do think that the depth of this team is so absolutely terrifying that like one injury, 2 injuries certainly, but even one injury to a key piece could totally undermine this entire operation. Is they're just playing with fire. It's a high wire act right now with the depth on this team. And I do not think it's going to go well. So I am going to take the under on Blue Jays games played in October, under 4.5.
There it is. We won't forget that one.
No, we will not. And we disagreed on 8 out of those 13. So that's pretty good. It's going to be cool to come back to these as the season comes on and see who was right and who was wrong.
Definitely. It'll be a lot of fun.
It sure will. And we will have more fun after this on At The Letters, Blue Jays podcast on sportsnet.ca and iTunes. We'll be back to wrap this thing up and talk a little bit about defense. See you then. That's it for the maiden voyage of At The Letters, Sportsnet.ca's Blue Jays podcast. I will remind you that we are on iTunes. You can like, favorite, share, subscribe. I will remind you that my name is Arden Zwelling, and you can get me on Twitter at Arden Zwelling. I'll also remind you that my co-host name is Ben Nicholson-Smith. You can get him on Twitter at B Nicholson-Smith. And our producer, the talented Sam McKee, is also available on Twitter at Sam_Alton_McKee. Please let us know what you thought. Let us know what you liked, what you didn't like. We are looking forward to your feedback. We need it. It sustains us. Before we go, defense is the one thing that perhaps we have not covered off over the course of this inaugural podcast. Ben, it was an issue last year. It's been an issue for a few years, really, when you look at some of the defense on this team. Juan Francisco played a lot of games at third base last year. What are we seeing for the defense of this club?
I think it's going to be a better defensive team. And that starts with Russell Martin. I know we've heard a ton about it, but I think he really is a legitimately good defensive catcher. And that's going to make a big difference with a big trickle-down effect. And then you look beyond him to players like Josh Donaldson. And let's not compare him to Brett Laurie, because Juan Francisco was the guy who played most games at third base for the Blue Jays last year. And anyone would be an improvement over Juan Francisco on defense. Pompey is going to be good, as we talked about. Saunders. I think they're going to be a better defensive team. I'm not saying they're going to be the Royals or anything like that, but I think that they have some big room for improvement.
How much can defense affect a win-loss total, do you think? And I mean, I think the one you also didn't mention, Justin Smoak at first base, who's going to save a lot of throws from Jose Reyes, a lot of throws from Josh Donaldson. I mean, I think that'll make a difference. And third base defense is not something that the Blue Jays have put a lot of value on in the past. And this year, all of a sudden, they seem to really care about it. How much can, I mean, this improved defense affect the win-loss total of this team?
You know, that's a great question. And I don't claim to have an answer to it. I think it wouldn't be unreasonable to think that three wins, four wins, could be possible. I mean, that's probably an extremely optimistic view. But if you believe that Martin can add a couple on his own, and then you have other guys contributing as well, I think that three or four would be kind of a best case scenario for the Blue Jays.
You're going to see a massive swing in terms of frame strikes from D'Onofrio Navarro to Russell Martin, which is going to be a big help. I think you're going to see a big difference in center field with Dalton Pompey. Left field, Michael Saunders and Kevin Pillar, both, I'd say, an improvement over Melky Cabrera.
Yep.
I mean, maybe this is the inefficiency. Maybe this is the place where the Blue Jays kind of make up those five wins they didn't get last year.
It's one way they could do it. I think the offense is already good, and the pitching staff last year actually, on the starting side, was pretty solid as well, so you're not going to get improvement there. But one area they can improve would be the defense.
I like it, and I like this. This is the At the Letters Blue Jays podcast. We are on sportsnet.ca. We are on iTunes. Get at us all year long, and enjoy. I hope you like this one, and I hope you like all the future ones we're going to do. For our producer, Sam Alton-McKee, for my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith, and for myself, Arden Zwelling, thanks for coming along with us. It is At the Letters.